Well, well, welcome back, folks. If you're just joining us on this week's episode of Germ Hat, you missed a great conversation we had with Dr. Gerald Pudlow. Dr. Pudlow provided some helpful tips on how to get chlamydia jizz off of your favorite
what
cowboy
the
hat.
Fuck?
No,
dude, that's beyond germs.
Which, believe you me, is definitely something that could have got me out of a couple jams. Am I right or am I right?
You guys are
amen.
Filthy animals.
Next up. Me and my esteemed co-host will be testing out various cleaning solutions on our funny little collection of pointy white hooded hats.
Timely.
We're going to test out Jolt Cola, Drano, and pudding. Are you ready to get cleaning, ladies?
We were born ready, I think.
That's
ladies.
Our job.
Yeah.
Well, you say that, but you look confused. Am I on the wrong show again?
Yeah, what are you, Pudlow?
That's his co-host.
Oh, right. Got it.
God damn it. My brain is being melted by poisons. Okay, let's get this right. Welcome to Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast where we dig up a movie with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb, watch it, discuss it, and determine whether we think it is a hidden horror gem or a fucking turd. My name is Cody, and I'm cold lamping.
I'm Buggy, and I'm Meg Foster's eyes piercing into the depths of your fucking soul.
Ice. Oh,
yeah.
Ice, like a, what's it called? Stalagmite?
An icicle?
Icicle. That's
Otter
nice. Like an icicle.
Icicle.
Otter pop.
Icicle. I'm Beth, and I'm a modern hysterical person.
Is there a difference between a hysterical person and a modern hysterical person?
Well, so, thanks for asking. I recently finally watched Haxan, the original witch movie, and they talk about how people that were deemed witches were actually modern hysterical people. Ooh. Modern 1929 or whatever. So anyway, that's my, the dog has a bone.
Just let it go. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
Well, you answered my question about whether anyone has anything to talk about up top, off the dome, freestyle, and you did.
Oh, yeah. Which movie class? How about you, Bubs? You got any?
I mean, okay. I watched the Plankton movie, which has nothing to do with horror.
We're going to watch it.
SpongeBob.
But
it's what we need.
It's this new SpongeBob movie, and that's really good. And then also, have you guys heard of this show? I think it's called The Castle, or it's like this Lars von Trier show.
It's
what's it called?
Oh,
it's the hospital show.
Oh yeah, the
Is
it The Castle?
Kingdom.
No, the kingdom. Yeah, I know. The Kingdom is great.
Yes, I have. I've seen it.
Learned about this because
you're gonna love it. Your father.
Yeah, Dad rented it from Movie Madness. Shout out Movie Madness. And I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. So that's, I guess, another off the dome. Like, gonna check out that show.
You're gonna like it.
Supposed to be weird.
Hell yeah.
Weird. It's like Twin Peaks.
It's good European though. Yeah. Movies. It's, I remember really liking it. It's something I've always wanted to revisit actually, because I watched it when I worked at a video store when I was like 23 years old. Mm-hmm. And
I watched it when I was also 23 years old because I watched it. Yeah. When I started dating your dad.
Yeah. It's on Mubi also, if anyone's curious.
Yeah. Okay. Mubi rules. We don't have it right now, but
yeah. They have all three seasons.
All right.
Okay, fuck yeah. We had stuff on the top of the bill that I didn't plan for, which is great because I didn't write jack shit for that part of the agenda. So let's get into our movie. This was my movie. I picked a movie. Tonight, we are reviewing a film called Welcome to Arrow Beach. This is a movie that was released in 1973, directed by Lawrence Harvey. Written by Wallace C. Bennett, who did the story and screenplay, and there was an adaptation by Jack Gross Jr. I don't really understand the dynamic there, but it doesn't matter, fuck it. And this movie is starring Lawrence Harvey as Jason Henry, so we have one of those situations where the director is also the lead actor. Meg Foster is Robin, who is most famous for people of me and Beth's age as playing Hester Prynne in the Scarlet Letter TV miniseries, which
we watched in school.
Which most of us watched in school.
Never even like heard of this.
It's like peak Meg Foster.
Yeah.
I know you're a fan.
Piercing.
So. Yeah. No, it's
your
like
soul.
Young. We're having an issue with the dog this evening. As
He's like moving his
He really wants
toy
to chomp a bone tonight.
He's just suddenly discovered that he likes bones again after a drought. He found another one. Okay.
Holy moly.
Should I let him out?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. So Meg Foster was in a lot more than just the Scarlet Letter TV miniseries. She turned up in a number of horror numbers such as The Wind, They Live, is a good one, Leviathan, The Lords of Salem, Jeepers Creepers 3, and she was in an episode of Twin Peaks, The Return.
I know, a small thing. But also she was on Baskets.
That's how I recognized
her as an older person. I was like, those eyes, it's Hester Prynne, which is what happened watching this movie too.
She was also in Masters of the Universe from 1987. You guys remember that movie?
That movie with, what's his name?
Dolph Lundgren. Yeah.
Buggy had a big Dolph Lundgren thing.
I had like all of those old action movie stars thing.
I feel like muscles. That movie might be good. Like, I kind of want to watch it. I think it's like cheesy fun, but there's like cool stuff in it. Anyways, that's not the topic for tonight. We're still on the actors in this movie. Uh-oh. Yeah. Joanna Pettit plays Grace Hendry. Henry.
Dang, good, bud.
She was in a movie called The Evil from 1978 that Beth and I watched in October as part of our October marathon. It was pretty good. Kind of haunted house thing.
She's also a Bond girl. She was in Casino Royale.
Isn't that a Bond spoof?
No, that's... Casino Royale is the real one. Is Casino Royale the one with Roger Moore where it's a spoof? To be continued.
Yeah, we'll figure it out later.
I don't know. I thought that was like a newer one.
I don't know. Stuart Whitman plays Deputy Ricks and John Ireland plays Sheriff Duke Bingham. We mentioned John Ireland a couple episodes ago because he played a role in Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat. Mm-hmm. And I may have dropped a little hint about this movie in that episode, actually. So if you're keeping track of the lore, there you go. The music was composed by Tony Camillo with an opening and ending song by Lou Rawls. We'll talk about the music a little bit later. Where can you watch this movie? You can't, goddammit. Joke's on you, motherfuckers.
Wait.
Hold on. I'm getting some intel from the control room that I may have made a misstatement. I will be willing to admit that I made a misstatement. Unlike some people in our government. So yes, okay. Apparently you can get this movie at Scarecrow Video in Seattle, Washington.
Oh.
But be warned, there are multiple versions of this movie, and you definitely want to see the uncut version, which is only available on VHS, not the DVD, which is heavily edited. So here's a telltale sign that you have the right one. If it's not 99 minutes long, don't watch it. Okay, that's what I got there. How did we get our hands on this movie? I bought a copy from eBay that came all the way from England. But I forgot they have a different VHS system there. It's called PAL. Do you know what PAL stands for?
Okay, I'm going to throw it out there. Penis and... labia.
No, it's pooping ass licking.
No, really, what is it?
Alternating line.
Huh.
Versus NTSC, which is what we have here, which stands for National Television System Committee.
Oh, that's boring. Kinda cool.
I don't know.
Yeah, ours is better.
Yeah. Anyways, I found a video production company not far from our house that did the transfer to digital for me. So shout out to AVP Media in Portland. They did that transfer and that's how we watched it. So here's a little secret for our listeners. I am going to try posting this on YouTube and we'll see what happens. So like take a look before it gets taken down because I don't know how these works. But if you... look for Welcome to Arrow Beach Uncut. I think that's what I'm going to put it up as. And it'll be on the Gem Hunt Podcast YouTube channel, which I just made. And there's nothing on there. Or if you're my friend, you can just, contact me and I'll send it to you. for the small price of $55.
Yeah, because I just want to make a quick note that this is definitely the most expensive movie that we've ever fucking watched, including ones we've watched, you know, like live, probably more than like two of us going live and having drinks.
Yeah, possibly. It doesn't matter.
Or three of us. Yeah. No, oh, nothing matters.
We're in it for the lulz.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's this goddamn son of a bitch about? This is the part where I have to read a bunch of shit. Mm-hmm. Okay, the film opens with some on-screen texts, which I shall now dictate to you. There is a witch's tale that once a man has eaten human flesh, he will do it again and again and again. So that kind of sets you up for what to expect, don't it? If you knew nothing else about this movie, it was basically just announced to the viewer that we're dealing with the cannibalism subgenre here. And that is accurate.
That's true.
Thanks for the heads up, yeah. Bitches. Right. Thank you.
But let me tell you, this movie goes in some unexpected directions, which if you just let your mind go with the flow of the story, it's pretty fun, but we'll get to that later. So here we go. We're introduced to Robin right from the outset. She's kind of a free roaming hippie type person who's hitchhiking along the California coast. As she is waiting for a ride, she's heckled by a car full of dudes and is ultimately picked up by a gentleman named Dino in a bright yellow hot rod. It becomes clear quite quickly that this guy is bad news, possibly a pervert, definitely a dick, and he's for sure driving too goddamn fast. Well, one thing leads to another, and suddenly the cops are on their tail, so this dude decides to outrun them, as one does in the 70s. But little does he know that they're headed straight for a construction zone. And then kablammo! Dude crashes the hot rod, flips upside down, and it's a whole mess. Fortunately for Robin, she's fine. She gets out of the car. Same can't be said for poor old Dino, who is royally fucked up. And this all happens in like the first 5 minutes of the movie, by the way.
But it's okay that he's fucked up because he's on cocaine.
Yeah, he's on a cocaine
so
man.
So much blow. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. But the thing is, this is really just a setup for Robin to have her first interaction with the cops. And that's important because there's an interesting dynamic between the cops and Robin throughout this film. So we get a glimpse of the titular sign also in this scene. Welcome to Arrow Beach, population 7,500. So having escaped the car crash unscathed, Robin saunters down to the beach to get naked. Yep. Go for a swim and take a nap in the sun, which sounds pretty good to me. I'm okay with this. Mm-hmm. At this point, we get a sense that something creepy is afoot. As Robin is disrobing on the beach, we cut to a close-up of a telescope and an eyeball, which indicates that someone up on the hill is doing some creeping and a peeping. Enter one Jason Henry, played by our lead actor and director, Lawrence Harvey. Jason is an interesting dude, to say the least. What do you think?
Yeah.
I like his outfit when he walks up.
He's like in a fucking suit. He looks like Barnabas from Dark Shadows.
He has an awesome coat.
Yeah, yeah. It's like...
He's got dark sunglasses, black coat. It's pretty
sweet. Kind of what I wear on the beach, actually.
Yeah, not really. Dope,
for sure, goth looks, on the beach.
I start goth and then I go to the Meg Foster, totally new. I only have two, you know, the goth and the...
Two wolves are inside of you. Yeah. One's naked and one's a beach goth.
I am just a beach goth, actually. Yeah. Jason Henry, good outfit.
He does look fabulous.
He looks rich.
Is he fabulous?
Yeah, he looks rich.
Mm-hmm.
So after a brief conversation, he invites Robin back to his house for dinner. She's a bit apprehensive, but she's also a go-with-the-flow hippie, and she might have a thing for Jason, so she heads up to his house. We are then introduced to Grace, Jason's sister, supposedly. And Grace ain't too happy that Jason has brought another girl to the house. The vibes get weird real fast. We get a gross dinner scene with some bloody meat close-ups. Jason invites Robin to stay the night, but tells her to stay away from the basement, which is a totally normal thing to tell someone.
Of course.
And Grace suggests that she locks her door before bed, which is also a completely normal thing to tell someone.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we make it a rule in this house to lock all bedroom doors. It's nothing to be alarmed about. Just lock the door. If it pleases you.
Yes, it does please me.
All right, I'll do it then.
And the night just gets more fucked up from here on out. We find out Jason and Grace are not really brother and sister, or maybe they are, and they be banging.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that later. Yeah. Jason has some weird war flashbacks from his time in Korea that seem to suggest that maybe he ate at least one member of his squadron after some sort of plane crash. And this is an interesting overlap with the film Ravenous, which we talked about recently. Very different films, but there's a interesting sort of like beginning premise where a guy at war gets a taste for blood and it kind of dictates the rest of the movie. So I thought that was interesting. I wanted to make a note of that. Robin decides to explore the house despite what people may decide as a better judgment for her. She makes her way into the basement, which is open for some reason, only to discover a creepy photography studio. And upon further exploration, she finds Jason chopping the shit out of some suspicious-looking meat in his butcher room. There's a chase scene, and fortunately, she manages to bust out through a basement window and makes a run for it, although she's a bit worse for wear after this whole escapade. Ultimately, she ends up at a shithole bar where she meets the town whore, who is quite funny, and becomes an unfortunate victim later in the film.
Who's also not just a town, like most town whores, you know, she used to be an entertainer.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
This is what town whores are in L.A. Oh. So Robin shuffled from the police station to a hospital where she attempts to recover from this horrific evening. And this, at this point, the movie takes an interesting turn as Jason and Grace attempt to deal with the situation. Robin meets a boy in the hospital, and the cops are trying their best to figure out what the fuck is going on while focusing most of their energy on a vial of drugs that Jason planted in Robin's backpack. This leads to an interesting drug paranoia subplot, a post-war PTSD subplot, and a small subplot involving local politics. Rather than leaving town as cop suggests, Robin decides she needs to solve the mystery of what exactly is going on up at Jason's house with her new boy toy in tow. And this leads to a completely wacko, gore-filled climax and an ending that will definitely leave you saying, what the fuck? In fact, the whole movie might leave you saying, what the fuck? Okay, anything I missed there in terms of plot points?
What the fuck?
Yeah, no, what the fuck?
I have just a couple really little... One thing about Robin is her, like, leaving town, not leaving town. You get, like, a sense that she's pretty... She's kind of this floaty hippie, but she's pretty savvy because how she leaves town, doesn't leave town, and she, like, gets on a bus and then, like, switches. Like, she's kind of like a smooth operator, actually. You know what I mean? Like,
I have a little bit to talk about that later, actually. Yeah,
but that is just one thing. It's not like she decides not to leave town. She, like, does and then comes back.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my only... You have anything?
I mean...
He didn't miss anything.
No, there's, like, just little random, like, weird things that happen in the movie, but
there's a
lot of, like, just tidbits where you're like, oh, okay, I guess... Also that, and like some lines that I don't think are like bad, but they are weird. I'm like, this is kind of awkward. Kind of a little strange sentence right there.
1973, hun.
Yeah. Also, the girl who plays the cannibal guy's sister or whatever.
Joanna Pettit.
She's so hot. It's like insane. Like the mug on that lady.
She has an incredible face.
You put your money on the wrong hot person that this person was going to announce.
I was like, you are going to think Jason is so fucking hot.
And I didn't because, I don't know.
We'll get into maybe some reasons why. Will you hand me my notebook? It should be right there. It's the lady with a VW bug. Sorry, you might have to cut this.
Okay, you have your notebook.
The problem is I have so many notebooks. I just want to say a really quick quote from the beginning of the movie. Are you really want me to say what's in my notebook?
Yeah, say what's in your notebook.
I can't understand why nymphos never hitchhike is something the original, which is important because it sets up this woman who's just trying to like go on an adventure, but this is the kind of men she's running into, yeah,
the
right?
environment.
Yeah.
I can't understand why nymphomaniacs never hitchhike. It's unbelievable.
Oh, would you mind letting me out? I'd like to get out of the car. Stop and let me out, please.
Oh, now this is really starting to get grim.
I don't think it's unimportant.
I like it. I mean, the whole scene with Dino and his coked up driving at the beginning is like such an interesting beginning. It has nothing to do with the rest of the movie, but it really does kind of like kick it off. And it really gives you some momentum at the start of the movie, which may or may not die down as it goes on. But anyways, let's talk about some shit about this movie. So I want to talk about this film's history and Lawrence Harvey, because he's an interesting fella. So this film is kind of an interesting history. As I mentioned, Lawrence Harvey directed and starred in the film. And this was supposed to be one of three films that Harvey was going to produce and direct in Houston in the early 70s. This film ultimately ended up going into production in Southern California in February of 1973. For a production company called Brute Productions. I don't know what's important about that, but I see a lot of references to it. So take that as you will. After completion, the movie was basically shelved by Warner Brothers because they didn't know what the fuck to do with it. And I guess that kind of makes sense. It's a bit weird, but it only played at a handful of festivals and had a very limited theatrical release. And then Lawrence Harvey sadly passed away at the age of 45 later that same year. Not of autoerotic asphyxiation. So he passed away of stomach cancer, which is a much less fun way to die.
Very much less fun. Maybe if you have stomach cancer and you're about to die, you should autoerotically asphyxiate
yourself. I mean, that's my plan. Yeah. So basically, Lawrence Harvey was directing and starring in this movie as he was actively dying of stomach cancer. That's kind of crazy. Apparently, he was calling in like last minute edits on his deathbed to this film. So, yeah, it's a sad, weird thing. So this film basically sat around for several years, and at some point it was cut down by a full 15 minutes, removing most of the fun stuff, and it was temporarily renamed Tender Flesh.
I saw that.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the only version that existed in the U.S. So as I mentioned, if you happen upon this movie, especially on DVD, and it says it's 85 minutes long, that ain't the one you want. You want the 99-minute version, which apparently is the Dutch version. Shout out to Tom and Pete. Thanks for saving this movie, dudes.
Skull? What's the... Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Sprinkles?
Hoggleslug. Yeah.
Hoggleslug!
So let's talk about Lawrence Harvey for a bit. What did you think of old Mr. Harvey in this movie? Just general sense.
I have a couple things to say that like tie a couple things together that you said. I'm going to get slightly into what I read about him for one second, which is he was nominated for an Oscar for a performance he did in the 50s.
Oh.
In, what is it called? Room at the Top, I think. And this particular movie, like how I was kind of bringing in what the dude, the piece of shit said to the hitchhiker, Lawrence Harvey said about this movie that it was going to be a contemporary parable about innocence in a very sick world. And I think that's what you see with those two characters. But then later on, it kind of didn't do so well. And then he said, it's a thriller making no comment on anything. So I just kind of thought that was like...
I like that.
Wow. I mean, and so that was kind of the stuff that stood out. He, though, there's a lot about him if you want to dig into who Lawrence Harvey was.
For sure.
I don't want to take it all away from you. So I'm just going to say some people thought he was closeted gay, mm-hmm. and he was very close friends with Elizabeth Taylor.
Hell yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm going to get back to that in a second. Here's a few details. He was born in Lithuania and emigrated to South Africa with his family in 1934. He joined the South African Army during World War II and was assigned to the Entertainment Unit, which is not a thing that I realized you could be assigned to in the Army. Did you guys ever hear about anything like this?
I mean,
what does that mean?
I don't know. It tracks to me because, like, during World War II, they had all those, like, Marilyn Monroe went over, you know, the whole, like, support the troops. So I'm sure there was infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
On the Lithuanian thing, his real name is Zvi Moshe Skikny. I don't even know how to say it. Like, it's a very different name than Lawrence Harvey.
Yeah.
And there's a whole history of how he had to change his name to fit in. And yeah.
Exactly. And I'm assuming that his time in the entertainment unit of the army may have played a role in his decision to pursue acting as a career.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, he moved to London and then to Manchester to do an apprenticeship in local theater and was known to continually be in debt and adopted a firm belief in living beyond his means, which he carried through to his death, which I like that.
I like that, too. And I heard that he was upset that he had stomach cancer because he always ate well. But also in a different article, I read that he was a heavy drinker and smoker, which sounds pretty relatable to me because I don't smoke, but, you know, eat like a monk, drink like a monk, I guess.
Do monks drink
priest.
Like that?
Eat like a monk, drink like a priest.
There we go.
Oh, man. Also, from what I read, it sounds like he was kind of struggling in his film and theater career when he was still in the UK and then ultimately signed with Warner Brothers and moved to Hollywood. And that's where his movie career kind of really took off. His official final movie, speaking of Elizabeth Taylor, was a movie called Night Watch with Elizabeth Taylor, and it has a vaguely horror-sounding premise. And looking back through his filmography, he didn't really do a lot of horror work.
Mm-hmm.
However, his film debut was a horror flick called House of Darkness, which came out in 1948. So his first movie was a horror flick, and then he didn't really do anything horror-related until Welcome to Arrow Beach, which is interesting. He was also apparently a good luck charm for actresses he appeared with who went on to win awards for the films they were in with him. So that's pretty interesting, yeah.
He's an ally.
Yeah,
ally.
I guess so.
Hey.
And if he hadn't have died, it sounds like he was trying to get away from acting and move more towards directing, which is kind of sad because I would have liked to see what he did after this movie because this is an interesting film. Okay, so that's the film history, and that's a little bit about Lawrence Harvey, who is an actor who I didn't know much about until we watched this.
And I just think there's a lot more to say about him, too.
I think
it's like a kind of, I fell down a rabbit hole about him, and I think people should look him up.
Yeah, look him up. And watch his movies. He's made 1 million of them.
And I think he's hot. And what do you think?
I mean, he's not like my type. I think he looks cool. He looks fab in this movie. I've never like heard of him before this moment.
He's in The Manchurian Candidate. He's one of the main characters.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is at all. But...
Okay, well, good. It's, you know.
He's also in the Spankurian Wang did this.
Guys.
But he's cool. Like, he's just not my type. He's not ugly. He's like a handsome man. I can acknowledge that.
You don't like handsome gays.
I don't. You heard here first. I don't.
Not like 50% of the people you follow on social media.
I don't.
25%. Okay, sorry. I derailed this again.
That's okay. Let's talk about some story elements here. So we have a cannibalism storyline versus a hippie era drug movie versus a traumatized war veteran PTSD storyline. There's a lot of stuff going on here. Let's start with cannibal stuff. This film came out in 1973, and apparently Umberto Lenzi is credited with originating the cannibal subgenre with a film called Man from Deep River in 1972. So Welcome to Arrow Beach was right there at the beginning of this cannibal subgenre. This came out 1 year before Texas Chainsaw Massacre, as you noted, came out in 1974. So probably were in production around the same time. I guess Texas Chainsaw Massacre does deal with cannibalism, but it does a lot more than just cannibalism.
It's something about the way the violence is, though, too.
Yeah, it's...
And I think, I just wonder if there was something, you know, like zeitgeisty that something, you know, like 70s after the hippie era, it was like
something about war and
like about, you know, man eat man. Like right now there's certain themes you're seeing in horror movies that come out right now, like, you know, like technology, whatever, what's the fear, you know? I don't know. I just think it's interesting that there was something going on in that little pocket of the 70s that maybe was.
Yeah, I don't know what, like, the current ones are. There's a lot of vampire movies. I feel like every, like, 10 years, it's a new vampire era.
I think right now we, like, are just living in a situation where the news is actually horror.
Yeah. There's been a lot of, like, horror movies and thrillers that have to do with, like, misinformation, too.
I think that's, you know, and obviously the virus stuff has been prevalent. But I just wonder what the exact, like, societal triggers for that idea of cannibalism in that part of the,
I don't know. I don't know. It is interesting. But, you know, another interesting point is, unlike your backwoods hillbillies or your chud mutants, or your isolated tribes like Cannibal Holocaust, Welcome to Arrow Beach presents us with an entirely different type of cannibal who's kind of a troubled upper-class war veteran.
In, like, L.A., basically. It seems like it's, like, Malibu or something.
Yeah, it's a very interesting spin on what you would expect from a cannibalism movie. But there are additional subplots also that make this a bit of a confounding film. The cops are convinced that Robin is some doped-up drug fiend, and that's the explanation for all the weird shit that goes on in the second half of this film. So it definitely has that sort of post-60s drug paranoia freakout vibe to it. There's really a great quote from some of the cops about, like, mescaline and quaaludes.
Oh, yeah. Somebody says quaaludes.
Somebody says quaaludes.
Have you ever even heard of quaaludes?
No.
That makes sense because it's something that, like, I feel like Cody and I heard the word quaalude from, like, somebody who heard about it in a movie, you know, like it was a 60s, 70s drug that, like, maybe 80s, but I don't think so.
Well, how is she, Martin? Well, there's always a threat of an OD with these kids. You never know what other drugs she's got in her system. But she'll be all right in a day or two.
What do you think?
Well, no scar.
That's not what I meant.
But all her symptoms were traumatic shock, incoherent babbling, disassociation.
And she wasn't on any drugs.
I didn't say that. She could have been on mescaline or PCP, that's an animal tranquilizer, Quaalude, but none of these things show up in a blood test.
How about cocaine? We found cocaine in a possession earlier today.
Yeah, cocaine could have done it.
So what do you want me to do with her?
I don't know. Wasn't it our friend and relative Morgan Ritchie that coined the term Quaalude? Wasn't it some, like, inside joke? I don't know. Anyways,
I don't know. Maybe. Matter. Maybe I wasn't there for that. But yeah, hearing that was funny because it's like something so, like, legendary that doesn't exist anymore. But yeah, that definitely gets into that, like, hippie fatigue, drug fatigue, like, the turning, you know, that happened in, like, 69.
There's also some interesting components of the cops trying to figure out the drug thing that kind of, like, drills them towards the truth, which is an interesting concept. It's like they're, you know, they're sort of just freaking out about drugs, but it also, it starts to steer them back to, like, what's actually happening at the murder house.
Yeah, because they, but it's funny because it's not like lab technology that, right. Do you remember that? It was, like, written on the bottle.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the bottles. It's not like we analyzed it in our lab. It's like, oh, the bottle in her bag.
Look at what it says on it.
Yeah.
This is an upper. No, what's a downer? Oh, what's that upper? Let's call the pharmacist.
Yeah, and the pharmacist just tells them, no, the thing written on the bottle that was in her bag. Yeah.
There's also a funny quote about, I think it's like Robin's boyfriend later in the film, where it's like, well, there's some places that women shoot up that you don't see. Remember that?
Oh, right. So, of course, he also thinks she's a hysterical broad.
Everybody
on
thinks
drugs.
She's like a drugged out.
Which
broad.
Is a huge, which you're talking about. Huge theme is like the, she's.
Yeah, it takes that angle pretty deep.
Look, whatever that stuff was you took the other night, it could be very dangerous, and I just hope you never do it again.
What stuff? Hey, Alex, what is the stuff that everybody knows about but me?
Robin, it's kind of hard to deny it. They found it in your tote bag.
You just tell me what it was?
Well, that there was no mention of any specific drug, just a drug and a syringe. But anyway, it's the works that scare me.
ever owned or used. A syringe in my life. Really, really, the strongest stuff I've ever been on is grass. Look, Alex, if I'd used a spike, right, I'd have tracks. Well, look, there's no tracks here, and there's no tracks here. Don't believe me.
Robin, I believe you. But the places that a woman could inject herself with a syringe defy the imagination.
But then there's also this PTSD angle where Jason Henry is having some serious PTSD from his time in the army.
Mm-hmm.
And he, as I mentioned, likely ate some of his fellow soldiers. At least that's what it alludes to. And that's why he's a cannibal now. And his sister and fuck buddy, Grace, is very focused on getting him help and trying to steer him right and trying to hide him from society because he is the way that he is. That's kind of an interesting component of this because it's like, you know, he isn't presented as just like a pure villain. He has a reason for doing what he's doing.
Which makes me want to not go too far on the like gossipy stuff that I read about him being a closeted gay, but it's that same kind of like he's living in society, but he's trying to do right, but he has these urges, right? I mean, did you pick up on that at all?
Or? I mean, I didn't clock that he was gay, but like that could maybe as he was getting older, that like could influence his work.
Right. Like the idea of making a movie about someone who is not a bad person, but is acting on impulses that are.
But he is a bad person in this movie. Look what he did to the town whore. That was like messed up. Yeah.
I mean, yes, that. Yeah.
And he's done it like a lot, too. True. Did you see how full?
Yeah, he had a lot of meat.
Well, and his sister slash, what did you say? Fuck buddy.
Fuck buddy, like, yeah. His sister
had a lot
buddy.
Of feelings about how he kept bringing women back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. All I'm going to say is it's a little bit different from being gay because in this scenario,
he is a bad
person.
I'm not. I know, but I'm saying it's that idea of being like, I just wonder if some of that went into like how he related to this character.
Right. No, I think like I get your point. I'm just saying like. Oh.
So you don't think being gay and being a cannibal are the same?
This might be a very radical stance to take, but no, I don't.
Oh.
They took DEI out of her. just kidding. Her university.
I don't know
they
what that
the
is.
They took the money out.
Never
they
heard
took
of it.
The... Anyway.
So there's a lot of subplots that are on top of what could be just a simple cannibal film. And some people think that it doesn't add up at all. Some people like the way it flows. We'll talk about that a bit later when we get into our thoughts and feelings. But I kind of wanted to talk about the style of this film, like the look and feel. And obviously, we had a digital transfer from an old-ass videotape, so the quality was a bit rough. But taking that out of the equation, this film just kind of has an odd feel to it, right? I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's just kind of like, what is this movie doing and where is it taking us? Like, what do you think about the feel of it?
Yeah, there's a lot of confusing, like, vibe changes, I feel like. Like, that's, it's constantly, like, morphing into something different. And it almost feels like, and this isn't, like, a detriment, but, like, it's lacking something. And I'm not sure if it's, like, an artistic choice or, like, what, but there's just sort of this feeling of, like, there's something missing here.
I see what you're saying, because I was going to say more like it's, like, genre, like, it feels like a made-for-TV movie spliced together with some, like, pretty gory, like...
Yeah, it is, like,
it's pretty, you know, realistic and, like, choppy. I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but there's more to it than that. It's like, there's, yeah, if there was, like, a little more storyline...
It's, like, uncanny, though. Like, it's not exactly like it's missing something plot-wise. It just feels like a very uncanny, like, weird atmosphere where you're, like, it's like
it, but don't you think, I just feel like it's like someone's psyche.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. It just feels like weird. It's like, these are like half people in a way. It's like,
they're like almost a dream logic.
Yeah. But it is very dream logic-y.
Yeah.
I like that. I like half people and I like dream logic in terms of this movie. I hadn't thought about those terms, but it does explain it kind of well. Like the way it feels, like that's kind of one of my takeaways. It's just like, this movie feels weird. I can't like quite wrap my mind around like where it's taking me. the look is also interesting because it's got like this small California beach town, which is a weird place for a cannibal themed horror film. Maybe I should donate this to Movie Madness for the coastal horror film section.
Oh, yeah, but then people have to have PAL.
Yeah, that's true. All right, I'm keeping it. We do get a titular line in this film that's delivered by Robin's boyfriend later in the film, I believe.
The mop boy.
Which is great.
Helen. Well, welcome to Arrow Beach.
I still need to make a little theme song for titular lines.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the music.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to talk about this because as we were watching this, especially at the beginning, Beth, you said this reminded you of Hawaii Five-0 or something like that.
Yeah, some of the music felt, and also just the filming of the parts that aren't horror felt, it looked and sounded, because you see like cliffs and dunes and it's like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, you know, like it felt kind of Hawaii Five-0.
Yeah.
Which I was a big fan of in high school.
So the theme song by Lou Rawls that comes in at the beginning and the end, it just feels a bit out of place, don't it?
Yeah.
It's hella weird. Like, I don't understand it. And I don't know. Part of me kind of likes how weird it is, but like also part of me is like, what the fuck is this song doing here?
It feels like there's been a positive like resolution.
Yeah.
do I put my Lou Rawls comment here? Am I allowed to?
Yeah, go for it.
So I still don't exactly know who Lou Rawls is, but I know about him because of the Far Side lyric and the Your Mama song. Do you know the song?
No.
It's, you were beatboxing for Lou Rawls in some bright red boxer draws, which my friend Lauren and I wrote the lyrics to this whole song in Sharpie on our desks in our math class in junior high. No, but it's just like such a funny thing. I was like, I still don't know who Lou Rawls is. But when he said Lou Rawls, I was like, oh.
You know that. You know that guy.
I know he's like an art, but I wasn't expecting him to sound
singer,
so,
man.
Yeah, like.
Don't shit on Lou Rawls.
It's very like.
I'm not shitting on Lou Rawls, but do you know any other, what do you know about Lou Rawls?
I know it rhymes with poo balls.
Oh, it's true. That's much ruder than what I said. How about you? What do you know about Lou Rawls?
I've never heard of this person.
Okay, so I have because of the Far Side, so thank you.
There we go. You're the winner.
Have you heard of the Far Side?
No, I know about the Far Side Gallery. That's like
different.
Weird comic, but no.
This is Harcyde. You'd like them.
Rap.
It's rap.
Rap music.
Whoa.
It's rap music. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I need to stop talking.
So as this film begins to move into horror territory, the music definitely starts to get weird.
Yeah.
It like almost is goblin-esque, right? It like feels a bit Italian. It like it's funky, but it's also abstract. Which really kind of adds to how oddly this film pivots to the horror elements, because it just kind of feels like a weird, cheesy drama thriller at
in
first.
In between, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and totally. Then when like it starts to get into horror and the music changes, it's like...
It's like...
Yeah, completely different.
Like, whoa.
Oh, it's super weird. And there's like, when the like final fight scene happens, whatever like sounds are being used are like the most confusing, distracting like sounds. They were like weird.
For sure.
I was so like, whoa, what is even going on right now?
Yeah.
And I've talked too much, but the guy who did the sound, Tony Camillo or Camillo, is he's like a Motown guy and a disco guy that produced songs for Gladys Knight and the Pips. So he's
I'm gonna look him up.
Yeah.
There's also this funny random moment where the Inspector Gadget theme song pops up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't know. I'm assuming it was unintentional. Yeah.
No,
but it was
pre.
Very close.
It's
it was
pre.
Like,
no, it's so pre.
It's got to be. Yeah.
No. And it was like, and we were like, and I
Inspector
went,
Gadget.
Inspector Gadget. Cause it was like,
Thank you.
It didn't go all the way to
we were both feeling it, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, this is Inspector Gadget did not come out till the 90s, right?
I have no idea.
Anyway, I forgot about that. Thank you for bringing that up.
So let's talk about the gore and the weirdness and the horror elements a bit, because this film sort of plays out like a thriller for much of the film. But then when the horror elements finally happen, it's pretty fucking wild. Okay, so in the context of like this movie sort of feeling like a thriller, what did you think about the moments that made it a horror film? Were they effective? What stood out to you? Was any of the gore shocking? I'm just curious, like, how we're feeling about this.
Well, I definitely think when I don't even remember her name now. She's just the town whore to me.
Town like,
whore.
I feel Ginger. Bad. Her name is Ginger.
Ginger. Ginger, the town whore.
I feel bad say just, like, her calling name. Her, like,
fucking the town Ginger. Whore
and over again. But, like, when she got murked, it was kind of intense. Like, yeah. It was
sad.
It wasn't, you know, scary, but I was kind of shocked at how, like, the camera work was pretty effective and it looked gross.
Mm-hmm.
And it had, like, this gross feel. It felt very, like, Grindhouse.
Hell
like,
yeah.
That's what I was thinking, like, during that whole part. Like, it just felt, like, kind of like that weird 70s production.
But it's early, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. It's before.
Yeah. So, one thing I saw that some people, this whole, like, there's this big photo shoot murder scene near the end that's pretty amazing.
With I think Ginger. It's amazing.
With Ginger, the town whore.
That's her full name.
And I saw somebody compare it to some of the death scenes in Peeping Tom from 1960. Have mm-hmm. you ever seen Peeping Tom?
No.
Mm-mm. It's kind of like a proto slasher in the same vein as Psycho was, okay. Which also came out in 1960. Okay,
right. This is after Psycho. Yeah. You guys are right.
But I think it's like, you know, I think there are some viable comparisons there, but yeah, it's fucking wild. Like, it goes from like sort of slow burn to this like wild shit from like 0 to 60.
You think he was like so mad about his cancer that he needed to like murder some broads?
Why do you know. Like try I to mean, get into his
that's why I'm
so
I, that's why I be murdering broads.
I know you're mad about your cancer, but I like I'm just trying to like figure it out because it doesn't make sense.
What do you mean it doesn't make sense?
The movie.
Yeah, but maybe it's just like a nonsensical movie.
Are you trying to tell me that some things in this universe don't make sense?
Of course not. I would never say something so preposterous.
No.
Please, Mom.
If you have AI, like everything makes sense.
Hey, daughter.
Hey, Mom. Sorry. Heathers. It's a Heathers.
I like it.
He hates
I'll take
it.
Heather's references here. Okay, we talked about a bunch of stuff. Let's do some thoughts and feelings. Anybody want to give their thoughts and feelings? Anybody got any strong thoughts and feelings? Mirror, mirror, mirror.
I like it and I don't know why.
Ooh, I like that.
It might be like actually reading about it after and that it made me have different feelings about some of the behind the scenes dynamics. I mean, we've had a conversation about Meg Foster's eyes.
Yeah, she's pretty.
Like, it's high quality people in this movie.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest script or execution, but there's something about it that's like, you can kind of see what it was trying to do.
Right. I definitely like appreciate its like vision for sure, because it was definitely ahead of its time in like a lot of ways. And I was, again, kind of impressed, like, you know, with how they handled the horror elements, even though it was, like, very, like, few and far between. Like, when that did occur, it was definitely, like, interesting. And mm-hmm. I was, like, surprised at how good it was. And also, everyone's, like, looks cool.
Everyone is hot and wearing good clothes. And
that's
the
true.
House looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which, I mean, but yeah, I just feel like it has, like, a... had something to say, I think, even if he disowned having something to say because he got butthurt about it later. I think it was trying to say something and it didn't do a great job of it, but there's something to that, you know? Like
yeah.
You can...
Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree with that. I liked the acting. You know, I thought everyone in this movie was really solid and none of the acting took me out of the movie, which is something that I'm beginning to realize is more important than mm-hmm. I... maybe once realized is that if all the acting is good, I can actually like kind of absorb a movie without being distracted by it. The script and the storyline is an interesting situation for me because on one hand, I really enjoyed that the movie was trying to weave so many of these unique components together, but it wasn't for a cannibal movie. It wasn't just like, yeah, freaky people eating people. But then on the other hand, the film didn't quite nail the integration of all the subplots, I don't think. So like, I liked that they were trying to do all this, but then at the same time, I was like, I don't know if all of it worked, but I did like the slow burn feel of it, building up to like all the crazy stuff that happens near the end. And I enjoyed the experience of not knowing where the film was going to take me. And man, when that wild shit pops off at the end, that photo shoot murder scene, man, that's a hell of an experience.
I thought of one, I don't want to cut you off, but
no,
like,
that's fine.
Talking about video quality. So last week we watched Night Feeder and it was terrible. And what you're saying about acting, that's what separates this from that is acting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I also I ended up digging the way that the music devolved into this weird Italian style, like synth funk weirdness, while it started out as like cheesy 70s, almost like sitcom.
But it ended with that too, which
it did end with it also. So that's funny.
All's well that ends well.
That's true. Right. Everybody's fine.
I'm still sitting on this kind of unresolved what the fuck feeling about the whole movie, which I'm not sure is good or bad, but like, I don't know. It almost makes me want to watch it again.
Yeah,
which,
me too.
Yeah.
The ending's like hard to process.
Yeah, the ending is like, what the fuck, man?
Too. It's like, it all happens in such a quick amount of time.
Yeah.
And it's strange, strange feeling.
So apparently on release, the reviews were quite negative, with one review calling it inept and distasteful.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
A lot of the reviews I read really weren't feeling it at all, especially the inclusion of the multiple subplots and what a lot of people noted as a missed opportunity to really play up this dynamic of sort of a free spirit hippie, like interacting with this tragic veteran with PTSD who happens to be a cannibal.
Who happens to be engaging in incest with a sister, maybe, which we did not revisit.
I don't know. Was there any like indication that it wasn't his sister? Because
that's
like,
what we thought.
Yeah,
right?
That's what we thought. Yeah, we thought it was like,
it
was a put on. Like, yeah, but I don't know. A lot of people like.
People on the internet think they were brother and sister.
I don't know. It just also like she's listed as his sister in the like credits. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, they do some kissing that is not.
They do like kissing. I remember when I was like. Because the first time they were gearing up to do that, I was like, oh, man, they're going to kiss.
Well, then I thought, oh, she's not his sister, actually. But
Flowers
I was like,
in
oh,
the
yeah,
attic
yeah.
is fuck.
Every, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, anyway. Let's do a quick obscurity rating
on
this goddamn
I'm
son
ready
of
for
a bitch. This is going to be fun. And I'm going to, you know, there's going to be some legal contests over my system here because there are ways to interpret some of these results. But IMDb votes, 449. IMDb critics, 16. Rotten Tomatoes reviews, 1. Availability in streaming, I'm going to say this is VHS only because that's the only way you can watch the uncut version. Otherwise, you're just watching a
different movie.
You're just watching a made for TV something or whatever.
Right.
So I'm giving full scores for VHS only on this, which gives us our first 10 out of 10.
Wow. Also, that taints the reviews, though, too, because I remember reading that it came out in 1976, edited. So that's probably what a lot of people that are reviewing it might be reviewing.
Yeah, a lot of people probably reviewed a horror movie that didn't have any
horror
shit in it. Yeah. And so, like, this is just the most boring thriller that doesn't make any sense.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, it still doesn't make any sense, but it's not boring.
I mean, it makes sense. It's just, like, awkward transitioning.
Right, right.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Jumpy.
Yeah. I think, in my opinion, if the uncut version had a proper Blu-ray 4K restoration
it
and it looked good, and it sounded good, I think it has the potential for developing a cult following. It's just like, as it stands, no one really has access for a good quality uncut version. Okay. So like, yeah.
Justice for Lawrence Harvey?
Yeah, Lawrence Harvey.
Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. Lawrence Harvey's lives matter. Okay, it's time for special time.
Yay!
Oh, special time.
Hooray! It's special time.
Hold on. That was premature. We haven't voted on this film yet.
Oh, yeah. It's not time for special time.
Fuck voting.
Fuck special time.
Now okay, let's vote. Now is the thing that we do where we close our eyes and we don't look at each other and we count to three.
My eyes have been closed all evening.
And then we vote on whether this is a gem or a turd or somewhere in between. And we may or may not pee our pants while we're doing it.
Literally.
Or poop or pee.
Here we go. Or poop or pee or anything. 3, 2, 1. Oh no!
Dun, dun, dun.
What do you mean by that? You can
no, because okay.
Are you gonna round up or down? Okay, hold on.
There are no fucking halves. You
let
bitches.
Me speak, okay? Because here's what I'm gonna say. I liked it, and I would give it a thumbs up. But this is the conflict I always have with these like movies that I like. Is I'm like, would I recommend this movie?
Yes,
is what I'm thinking, and. In the current state it's in, like with the version I saw, like, I don't know. It would be very specific people. I wouldn't just be like to anybody, like, hey, you should watch this like movie I have on Google Drive. You're going to love it.
Then make it a thumbs down.
But it's not because I liked it. So I would round up because I like it. And I like the vision of this story and like what's come out of it. So I'd round up.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that you're half, but you would round up.
I would round up.
Okay, so what we have here is a tentative gem, I think.
I think so.
I think it is a gem, because I liked it and I'd watch it again. I just do think, like, the level of accessibility and the quality just, like, that we have is mm-hmm. not, like,
so
I yeah, think it's criterion. It's a big hurdle, right? Yeah.
I think I want to watch it again, actually.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Okay. That's fun. Okay. I was not expecting this. I was expecting this to be the movie that I was excited about that we're like, this is fucking shit. I was not expecting a movie that I was like, oh, there's something to this. I kind of like it. So that's fun for me.
Yeah. There was something to it.
Yeah. Okay. It's time for special time.
Special time.
It's special time.
That's what we're calling our new segment for now. It's a workshop. It's a work in progress. If anyone has any thoughts about the title for our new segment, hit us up and write us a check for $3,500 and we'll consider your suggestions. So for my special time, it took me a while to come up with an idea for my segment, but I decided that this would be a great opportunity to talk about a weird little YouTube video titled Hand Thing, featuring a character known as Shay St. John.
Shay, are you still doing that hand thing? I heard you're doing the hand thing today. God, what is that?
If you've never seen the hand thing, do yourself an unfortunate favor and just look it up on YouTube right now. The video is about a minute and 50 seconds. It'll probably be the first thing that comes up if you Google search it or YouTube search it. And I'm not going to bother trying to describe the whole thing. Just check it out. So the hand thing is often cited as one of the more unsettling videos on YouTube. It's definitely something I think about on a regular basis. And funny little weird quotes from this video pop into my head all the time. I'm not kidding. It's like, there's like random things about this video that I'm like constantly thinking about for some reason. And I've kind of been thinking about it lately because I have been having these like weird side effects from chemo that mess my hands up. So yeah, quick update.
By the way, chemo.
I yeah. do the
round
hand
two.
Thing.
Yeah, two rounds into chemo infusions out of eight. So there's still plenty of shithole shit to go. But anyway, it's fine. Whatever.
Everything's fine. It's yeah. fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
If I had to describe the feeling of the hand thing video, I would say it's funny and amusing, but also very creepy. And I will steal one of Buggy's favorite words, uncanny.
Uncanny.
Yeah, I feel like this video is very uncanny. And this was part of a series that was basically like YouTube 1.0 era videos from the early 2000s. Featuring this character of Shay St. John, and here is a little bit about Shay St. John from a Vice article from 2015. After being struck by a train, former model Shay spent many months in the hospital and lost both arms and both legs. She uses a wheelchair and doll-like mannequin limbs. During her time in the hospital, the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, not the California Institute of Abnormal Arts, performed mind control experiments on her until she was the most implanted person in the world. As a result, her behavior is a bit odd. So there was this kind of cult following around the lore of Shay St. John, which was an ongoing project of a punk rock musician and artist named Eric Fournier, who created this character and the series of short videos featuring Shay St. John, which he called Triggers. The videos were called Triggers for some reason. I don't know. It was like his whole art process, I guess. Unfortunately, Eric Fournier was a troubled soul who passed away in 2010.
Oh, shit.
From complications due to alcoholism. So he kind of was just like this really interesting performance artist who kind of just drank himself to death.
What the fuck, man? This yeah. is, you know, special time is supposed to be happy.
Well, this hey. Is special.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
So, anyway, after which his collaborators took Shay into the Witness Protection Program to ensure the CIA wouldn't do any more mind control experiments on her. So she's still alive and safe in the Witness Protection Program. I made you watch both of this tonight before we recorded, and I'm sure I made you watch it before.
Both of this, yes.
Yes. What did I say?
Then you made us watch both of this.
Oh, both of this. I made sure both of you watched this. Anyways, what are your impressions of this, and does it leave any impact on you? Or does it have any resonance, or is it just me?
100%. It reminds me of Maria Bamford, actually, a little bit. Hmm. And then also, as an awkward person, I think it's just that amplified, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen this before. I had, like, a YouTube era where I was watching, like, all of those weird videos. Like,
are you in your TikTok era now?
No, I'm still in my YouTube era. I'll never stop. It's just, like, it's gone different paths. It's gone a different way, but there was, like, a time where I was watching, like, that. I've watched that before. And then, like, Salad Fingers and all that, like, weird stuff. Oh, yeah. And I remember, like, being genuinely unsettled by that when I was a kid. Well, I still am a kid. But when I was, like, probably, like, 11.
You watched this at 11?
And, yeah, YouTube, you can, they don't stop you from watching anything.
But I didn't let you watch anything.
Whenever I had a phone, a real working phone, so, like, probably 12.
I did not give you a phone at 12.
Yeah, I had a phone.
Anyway, to be continued.
To be continued. Also, computers.
Right. Also, computers.
Also, computers.
That's a good note to end on. Also, computers.
Yeah.
Also,
computers. Well, I mean, that's about all I had on this topic. I just wanted to shine some light on this video for anyone who hadn't seen it.
So that guy really died, though?
Yeah, like, that guy really died. Yes.
That. Well, I just did, like, a little very, like, preliminary research, and I didn't run into that, and that makes me sad.
Yeah,
sad. I hate when, like, artists die.
That's usually what they do, you know.
That is usually what they do. Anyways, I encourage you all to go out there and go down the Shay St. John rabbit hole. Definitely check out her website, shaystjohn.us. Like, get stoned as hell and just click around on there for a while, because it's, like, straight out of the early 2000s. Everything you click on is just a weird rabbit hole, and I think it could be really fun. And to close out this segment, here is some text from Meet Shay section of her website. Hi, my name is Shay St. John, and I am pleased to meet you. If you do not already know who I am, you must live under a rock. Long story short, I am an entertainer. I am a model. I am a singer. I am a magician. I am an actor. I am so many things. I am also the world's record holder for having the most problems.
Oh, I love that part.
If you look around my website, you will understand what I mean. Though I have many problems, they do not stop me from being all the things I am. If you have problems, I hope I can show you that they do not have to stop you from doing all the things you want to do. I hope I can help you with your problems while living with mine. Go to the bubble and see the colors. Sincerely, Shay St. John.
Oh my gosh, it's such an uplifting note.
Indeed. And that's what I wanted to end with there.
Special.
So, that was my special time. I tried to keep it kind of short. Finally, I think we have a plan for the next episode, yes?
Oh, yeah. You wanna?
Unbeknownst to me.
Oh, right. Oh. So, here's the thing. Is
we got sabotaged, I guess.
My father is going to be taking my segment time to his segment.
I asked you, do you want to give your dad your episode?
Will you let your dad?
No, it'll be a co-production.
It will not
Buggy.
Be. My dad, the second he gets his grubby little hands on a mic, is going to take over everything.
Do I have to cut
what
this?
His movie is called?
No.
Because he didn't tell you about it.
He didn't tell me anything.
He told Cody and I about it.
I'm giving him a hard time just because he has not communicated any of this to me.
He talked to Cody and I. It's called Lips of Blood. He will be joining us.
He's going to be great. No, it's going to be like a very funny episode.
He will be talking much.
He will talk all of the time. but that's his way. And it's very fun. So it'll be a good time. I'm just mad that he didn't even like mention this. I've seen him like every day for the past couple of days and nothing related to that. So that's where my saltiness is coming from. But this will be fun.
You were in the house when the three of us were talking. Like Cody and your dad and I were talking about it.
No one talked to me about it.
You ran in the room and
yelled. Well, no one talked to me about it either. But here's a tip. If you want to get on Gem Hunt, just make the decision that you're going to be on an episode and show up and say hi. I am on the show today.
No, that's great. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I am sorry to everyone about how I don't communicate all the information I have all of the time because I feel like you guys should fucking talk to people about things.
But no one talks to us about it.
Why does everyone only talk to me all the time?
It's not true. I talk to all of these people. They just don't mention these
things.
You're
the only one in the house that likes talking to people.
Yes, that's right. Okay, I'm done.
This is the gift that you are plagued with.
Oh, God. I can just imagine these mic sounds from you off-roading.
And a good night.
Mom is lit. Lit as fuck.
I'm really not.
Yes, you are.
Dirt Dogs on a Gem Hunt.